At one time, the Humane Society of the United States was known for looking after pets. If you still think the group focuses on dogs and cats, think again. In recent years, the Humane Society has organized political campaigns against hunting, trapping, and family farming. It has also tried to improve the lives of animals used in scientific research and now operates sanctuaries for wild and exotic animals. The man behind these changes is the Society's president and CEO, Wayne Pacelli. He's written a book explaining his philosophy on the relationship between humans and animals. It's called The Bond, Our Kinship with Animals, Our Call to Defend Them. He'll be discussing the book and signing copies at the Barnes & Nobles at West Charleston and Fort Apache tonight at 7. And he joins us in studio. Wayne Pacelli, welcome to KNPR.
Thanks for having me.
Your book talks a lot about the relationship between humans and animals. What is that relationship?
Well, in the book, I talk about this instinctive bond that we have with other creatures that almost any, you know, person looking back on his or her childhood can really remember this affinity that you have for animals. I mean, kids learn about the world through animals. They love animals. And it really gives us a head start in doing the right thing for a fellow creature. And the first part of the book, I try to explain what the underlying basis for this connection with animals is. And as a society, let me just say, there are all sorts of social expressions of that. We have 171 million dogs and cats in our home. 70 million of us are wildlife watchers. We have Animal Planet on television, Nat Geo on television. We have all of this appreciation and love for animals in our society. And it starts with this bond that really is part of our moral intuition when it comes to dealing with animals.
Do we owe them protection, all animals?
Well, we do, and that's what I was going to say. The other big thesis in this book is we live in an incredible moment of contradiction in our relationship with animals. We have all these expressions of love and appreciation, yet we have so much cruelty in our society. And as you say, I mean, the birthright of the Humane Society of the United States is dogs and cats, but we're for all animals. They all matter, and they all suffer. So whether they're animals raised for food, or whether they're animals used in testing, or whether they're wild animals, they all deserve respectful and decent and merciful treatment. And we work in all of these realms. We're the largest animal protection group in the world, and we work on the front end, not just rescuing animals, which we think is critically important, but trying to prevent cruelty before it happens.
And why?
Because animals feel, and because animals have emotions, and also because we have an intellect and we exhibit an other-centered approach to people or communities. I mean, we're not just kind of living our lives and saying the heck with everybody else. We have standards. Our political traditions, our religious traditions encourage us to be good to one's neighbor. And I think we can't suspend these values when we're dealing with animals. They matter too. They have the same kind of heartbeat that we have. They breathe the same way that we do. And they may not be as intelligent as we are in terms of how we measure intelligence, but does that really matter in terms of their moral worth? We have the capacity to live a good life and also to allow these animals to live without suffering and pain and misery. And we can just make choices in life to make it easier. I mean, we don't need to wear a fur coat these days. We can buy a beautiful cloth coat or synthetic coat. We don't need to get a dog from a puppy mill. We can go to a shelter like the Lead Animal Shelter, or we can go to a rescue group to get a dog. We can even think about our food choices. Rather than buy eggs from factory farms where the laying hens are confined in small wire cages where they can barely turn around and they can't even extend their wings, you can get cage-free eggs from, you know, the stores now stock those as an alternative. There are literally 1,000 choices, and in The Bond, I talk about these choices that we can make that are small little choices for us that don't diminish our quality of life, but mean everything to the animals.
Now, one of the first stories in the book is about an injured circus elephant that goes to the Black Beauty Animal Sanctuary in Texas. A lot of people reading that story may say, well, it's sad that the elephant was injured, but why spend hundreds of dollars a week to keep an elephant in bananas and watermelon when there were so many other human needs that we have? What would you say to them?
Well, I would say that, you know, it's really in our pluralism of concerns in our society that we really build a civil society. I mean, some people are so passionate about finding a cure for a disease that may have afflicted a family member or a friend. Some of us are passionate about the environment, some about, you know, solving homelessness or attacking poverty. Some are also concerned about animal cruelty. And when we all follow our passions, it adds up to a beautiful, wonderful, good society. I mean, if we were all just concerned about the biggest issue, nuclear proliferation or something, where would that leave everybody else? Where would that leave the homeless? Where would that leave every? So animals are part of our society. We can't suspend our values of decency when it comes to dealing with animals.
So it's if you still care about other issues, that's fine too. It's just
you've got to, of course. Yeah. I mean, you know, you've got to have a broad approach. We're not just little siloed in society, but we do have our passions, and that's a good thing. We want to pursue those passions.
You also note that we have a genetic predisposition to be afraid of wild animals and creepy ones like mice. To some people, they're creepy.
Yeah.
Is it our duty to just get over that fear and still protect them?
Well, like I say in the book, you know, we have some biological instincts that have been pretty hardwired in us about having a connection with animals. I mean, before we, before our modern days, I mean, we lived as hunters and gatherers. We were immersed in nature. And if you look at today's tribal communities, whether the Yanomami in Brazil or tribal communities in New Guinea, these members of these communities have an unbelievable and intimate understanding of animals. I mean, a deep knowledge. So our connection with animals has really traced back throughout all of human history. But we do have some negative impulses toward animals, toward snakes or spiders or rodents. And I do think that we need to do our best to get over that. The question is, you know, I'm not asking people to love every animal. I'm asking them to respect creatures. And if you don't need to cause harm to them, then you shouldn't, because their little lives matter to them. And we are a smart enough species where we can figure out solutions and a good way to live our life without causing so much harm. You know,
isn't that part of just being human, and that, you know, we love to protect the small cute animals, rabbits and so forth, but you know, a rat.
Yeah.
You know, a snake.
Well, we don't do too well with the ones that are cute. You know, the rabbits are terribly exploited in a lot of ways. We have a rabbit sanctuary in South Carolina where all these injured and homeless rabbits. Our little motto at that sanctuary is we provide hope for the hopless. But but you know, even dogs and cats, I mean, we say we love them, but we're euthanizing 3.5 to 4 million of them in shelters every year because people aren't adopting them. If we just we could adopt and spay neuter our way out of this problem.
You talked about too, some groups around the world have a deep respect for nature and animals. Why do you think some people are so cruel to animals?
Well, I think in general, and this is part of my argument in the book, is that we've become in many ways disconnected from animals. I mean, we're very disconnected from our food supply. There are 10 billion animals slaughtered in the United States every year, and most of them are raised on factory farms. We're disconnected. We eat our piece of bacon, or we eat our eggs, or we eat some other product, not knowing how that animal was treated. Well, I can tell you, I've been to these factory farms. I've been to a laying hen operation with 10 million birds at a facility. It is a horrible life for these creatures. And I think if we connected ourselves and understood what was going on, we would make different choices, because I believe that most people have the right instincts. They want to be kind.
What do you think those choices should be? Do you think people should become vegetarians?
Well, like I mentioned before with the eggs, I mean, you've got a choice in the marketplace. You can buy cage-free eggs. I mean, I do think that people should think about their food choices. I personally am a vegetarian and have been for a long time. But the Humane Society of the United States is a big tent organization. We invite in vegetarians and inveterate carnivores. Wherever you are on the spectrum, you can make choices to make things better.
There are some animals whose lifespan is very short. So what do you say to those folks who would argue, why be nice to the animals that aren't going to live long anyway?
Well, it's all relative, right? I mean, if you have a short little time on the planet, don't you want that time to be good? I mean, you know, if you have a long life, that's great. But, you know, we want to, whatever our time frame is or our lifespan is, decency and mercy are the principles that we should try to observe. Cruelty's wrong. I mean, nobody accepts the idea that cruelty to animals is acceptable. Not for 1 minute, not for an hour, not for, you know, 10 years. I mean, it's just wrong to be cruel to the less powerful. Our cause at the Humane Society of the United States is fundamentally about the misuse of power. It's people having all the power over animals and misusing that power to serve very selfish ends.
And you talk about these factory farms and some of the slaughterhouses, but when we talk about exposing the cruelty there, don't we already have laws against these protect against this?
No, that's what's amazing. That's what is one of the many revelations in the book, is there are no federal laws to protect animals on the farm. In fact, the federal humane slaughter law applies only to mammals. And more than 95% of all the animals killed for food are birds. They're chickens. There are 9 billion chickens killed for food every year. And there are 250 to 300 million turkeys. They're not protected at all by federal law. But before the slaughterhouse, which is the final hours of the animal's life, there are no rules. Now, we have passed in California, we passed a ballot measure Prop 2 in 2008 to ban the extreme confinement of veal calves, breeding sows, and laying hens. We passed a measure in Arizona that was similar in 2006, and we've done it in about a half dozen states, but we still have a long way to go to provide animals raised for food with humane treatment. And again, this is an issue. You don't have to be a vegetarian to recognize that these animals raised for food, who are making the ultimate sacrifice for us, should not be jammed into cages and crates barely larger than their bodies. These factory farms are atrocious.
Some say, look, they're going to die anyway. They're dying for food.
They're
dying for us.
Yeah.
They're going to die anyway. What do you say to those folks?
Well, we're going to die, too. I mean, you and I are going to die at some point, but we want to have a good quality of life. I mean, we have standards in society. We have a law in Nevada that says you're not to be cruel to animals. We have a law in every state that says that. The problem is we're not logically applying these anti-cruelty principles in a world where animal use is wrapped up in our economy and in our daily lives. And I think we just need to stretch ourselves and do better. You know, we used to have chattel slavery in America. We used to have child labor. We used to deny women the right to vote. I mean, we did things for a long time that seemed normal and routine. But then we questioned it and said, hey, we have a society that's grounded on certain principles of fairness and justice. We can't suspend these values when it comes to dealing with animals.
Okay, you said you're a vegetarian, but not everybody's going to be a vegetarian.
No.
So what do you say, though, to, again, a chicken or a cow or a pig, whatever, that is going to be killed for food?
Yeah.
Is there a humane way to kill them?
I'd say do it as mercifully as possible.
And what is that?
Well, it means not, in terms of production, it means not jamming them into a small cage or crate for their entire life, not mutilating them, you know, by cutting off their beak or cutting off part of their foot, not putting them in an inhumane transport circumstance where the animals are crowded together and many of them suffer and die during the transport process, and not causing them terror in the slaughterhouse lines. I mean, there have been advances that our society has made in minimizing the pain and suffering that animals endure. I mean, you can go back to Upton Sinclair's The Jungle in 1906. He was aiming at our intellect in terms of the mistreatment of the immigrant laborers at these slaughterhouses in Chicago. But he hit us in the stomach by talking about what was going on and the cruelty that these animals were enduring.
So you're saying that there is a way to slaughter animals in a humane way?
There's certainly ways to mitigate the suffering. And again, the Humane Society is not an organization that says, well, you've got to be vegetarian. 95% of our members are not vegetarians. We say do things better. And we also say reduce our consumption of meat. I mean, we're eating 110 kilograms of meat per capita per year, the highest rate of meat consumption in the world, more than the Argentinians, more than any country in Europe. By reducing our consumption, we can do better in terms of animal care. It's better for our health. It's better for the environment. You know, what we're doing in these factory farms, we're loading up these animals with antibiotics and hormones. I mean, it's not safe for us.
We are joined by Wayne Pacelli, President and CEO of the Humane Society of the United States, also author of the book, The Bond, and he'll be speaking about that book tonight at Barnes & Noble's. Let's go to James in Las Vegas. By the way, the number 258-3552, that's 258-3552, or go online, knprtalk.org. James, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Go ahead, James.
Yeah, I'm a truck driver. I drive a refrigerated trailer, and a lot of times I go to these packing houses to pick up frozen meat, and it's disgusting. I mean, I've picked up trailers in the parking lot where there's puddles all over the parking lot full of blood. I've seen blood coming out of the trailers, you know, where it's probably the product, but, you know, it's just dripping all over the place, and I'm just disgusted at what I see just in the parking lot. And I just can't believe, you know, that I see these cattle trucks and poultry trucks coming in at these places, and they're just crammed in there. They just get them out of there, and like you were saying, I don't think they're humanely treated.
All right, you know, in my book, The Bond, I recount one of our undercover investigations at a California-based slaughter plant in Chino, not too far, you know, maybe 3 hours from Las Vegas, And this was a slaughter plant that was specializing in slaughtering spent dairy cows. Dairy cows are genetically modified, essentially, through selective breeding to produce enormous volumes of milk, 20,000 pounds of milk per cow per year on average. And the cows get spent pretty young in life, and they're not going to a retirement home. They get slaughtered and made into cheap ground beef. And this plant was operating in such a reckless way that many of the cows were so battered and beleaguered that they couldn't even walk. And the industry has a term for them called downer cows. And we exposed this. It led to the largest meat recall in American history because this plant was providing ground beef to national school lunch program in all 50 states. And these were cows that were wallowing in manure, too sick or injured to stand, and we were feeding the product to our kids. So it's just amazing to me when I kind of pull back the curtain and see what goes on a lot of these facilities. It's worse than people can imagine.
All right. James, thank you so much for the call. Appreciate your comments. Again, 258-3552. Or you can go online, knprtalk.org. We're talking with Wayne Pacelli, President and CEO of the Humane Society of the United States. Wayne Pacelli, you campaigned against pig crates in Arizona. Tell us what they were.
Well, again, the broader category here is the industrialization of agriculture. And I'll say that we've got many farmers who are members of the Humane Society, people who raise cattle or other animals and do it in a way that allows the animals to be animals, that they have access to pasture, they could feel sunlight on their backs or soil beneath their feet. But we've been concerned about this industrialization where the animals are treated like meat, milk, and egg-producing machines, and they're jammed into warehouses and within those warehouses sometimes into cages and crates. So we did a ballot measure in Arizona, and the measure stopped the confinement of breeding sows in 2-foot by 7-foot cages called gestation crates. Essentially, the cage is barely wider than the pig's body, and she can take just one step forward, one step back. She's impregnated 7, 8, 9, 10 successive times. So she's in the crate for 3, 3.5 years, essentially never getting out, moved from one crate to the next. That'd be the only movement. And then she's slaughtered at the end of the process. Now, again, you know, pigs are intelligent, social creatures, and it's wrong to confine them in a cage where they're immobilized.
You want to return to smaller factory farms.
Smaller farms.
Okay.
Smaller humane farms where the animals can be animals, where they can move. And, yes, it's unpleasant to think that the animals are going to be slaughtered. And if you feel that way, then obviously vegetarianism is a good option. But if you're going to eat meat, at least allow the animals to have a decent life.
But let's look at the environmental issue. Is there enough land in the U.S. to return to smaller farms?
Well, let's say that right now what the factory farms are doing is awful for the environment. I mean, we have so many manure management problems because we're concentrating so many animals on these facilities. I mean, you have thousands and thousands of pigs or millions of chickens in one place. You get all that untreated waste. You know, when our waste as humans goes into the plants, it's treated. We're talking 10 billion animals a year with untreated waste going into the environment for the most part. So,
but what will smaller farms, now that you're going to have to spread them out more. As you mentioned, they're putting animals into confined cages for space.
Yeah.
You want them to roam freely. Now you need more space.
Well, let's be clear that cattle are not in these confinement systems. I mean, so we have space for cattle in America. I mean, cattle ranchers are not confining these animals. It's the veal calves, just one category. But yes, I mean, if we're going to raise animals, you've got to give them space. And if we don't have enough space, then I think we've got to maybe think about reducing our consumption a little bit. We're eating so much, it's related to so many.
All right, well, that's, again, you're asking people
to make a life choices.
To make a life change, that's true. Yeah. The other thing, too, is this. Won't that increase the cost of food?
You know, the driver.
Because when I go shopping for food, and if it is, you're talking about eggs from free-range chickens or, you know, more.
All the studies show that people are willing to pay a few more pennies to see that the animals are better treated. Let me say that we have all sorts of costs that aren't tallied at the cash register. When we have all this environmental destruction, we have all this animal cruelty, when we're giving antibiotics to animals on overcrowded factory farms and we're producing antibiotic-resistant bacteria that are making our antibiotics less useful for human diseases, there are costs in the billions of dollars for our society.
Okay, now you said that people would pay a little bit more, but
yes,
when you think about Las Vegas is unique because this is a place where you can go to eat a lot of food, a lot of cheap food. And that is important when you have all these tourists coming in because if you don't give them the cheap offers, then...
Some of the leading food providers are doing better and better on this. Steve Wynn has just, at all of the Wynn restaurants, he now has vegetarian and vegan options for all of the patrons of these facilities. He is really ahead of the curve on this. Wolfgang Puck sells no cage, no eggs from caged hens. It's all cage-free eggs. They don't buy any veal from these confinement systems. They don't buy pork from the confinement systems. More and more companies, we're working with Burger King, we're working with Denny's. We at the Humane Society have relationships with so many major food service providers to do better, and so many of them are taking their responsibility seriously, and we applaud them.
All right, now you say in the book that profit drives these food production industries. How do you unwind this powerful lobby? And as you said, there are billions of dollars at stake here.
The American people ultimately have the power. You know, and we see this with the political movements in our country. We see ultimately that the corporations and the politicians and everybody answers to the people. When we speak up and we recognize that we've got to sync up our economic institutions with our values. You know, when you say, okay, we're going to have agriculture, we're just going to drive costs down, not you, but in general society, when we're going to drive costs down just for profit and leave our values to the side, I mean, that's not the America that I know. I mean, we infuse our values in our daily conduct, in our daily lives, in our economic institutions, in all the things that we do. When you separate them and you divorce them, then you get some really terrible outcomes. You get child labor, you get slavery, you get all sorts of terrible things. We need to have agriculture operate with the values of our nation. Opposition to cruelty, protection of the environment, safe food. These are elemental principles.
And you talked about the Humane Society of the United States and some of the efforts that you've made in different states when it comes to trying to enact laws.
Yes.
The legislature in Carson City just enacted a bill outlawing puppy mills and trying to put some standards in breeding facilities. The Humane Society pushed that law.
Well, there were a lot of local organizations that really led the charge, and we applaud them, and it was a grassroots movement, and we thank them, and we thank the lawmakers for adopting this. It sets up some new standards. It doesn't go quite as far as we would like to see it, but it's good, and it's on the governor's desk. Also, the state passed legislation to make malicious acts of animal cruelty a felony on the first offense. Before, it was a third offense felony. So you had to mutilate animals two times before you'd get a serious charge for it. So the legislature's correcting that. We hope the governor signs that, too. And stronger anti-poaching penalties, which is cruelty to wildlife. You know, people slaughtering wildlife and killing wildlife for trophies or other purposes. We need stronger laws. And that's an area where hunters and the Humane Society can agree.
Wayne Vaselli is the president and CEO of the Humane Society of the United States. He's also the author of the book, The Bond. He'll be speaking about the book and signing it at the Barnes & Noble at West Charleston tonight at 7. Wayne Vaselli, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for joining us. Our producers are Lee Hernandez and Irene Noguchi. Ian Milchrist is our senior producer, Rich Copeland, our technical director, and Adam Burke is our news director. I'm Luis Hernandez. For more on this and other editions of KNPR State of Nevada, visit our website, knpr.org.